Well, hello and welcome to another edition of Considering Some Things. I love when you do that now. This is my favorite thing. That's Keith Cox sitting over there. And
hello, everybody.
A very boring individual. He does some kind of work. He pushes a lot of paper. There's paperwork involved.
And I talk and I push paperwork. Yeah, it's very similar to you.
Yeah, Mark basically Storer. The same. I do. I talk and I push paperwork. I teach. Keith helps teachers not die. That's basically
right.
How this works.
I teach teachers.
Yeah, that's it.
And maintenance guys and custodians and administrators.
All manner of.
All, yeah. All people in the industry.
But by our lights and our evening and afternoon hours, we host this here podcast, Considering Some Things, because we like to consider things and we like to talk to you about those things. So
we are always considering things. That's for sure.
We've considered a lot. Very, very excited to have this particular episode, because what more could you hope for? I believe that alcohol consumption has climbed something on the order of 130% since the pandemic started.
It is always a faithful thing. When things are bad, alcohol sales through the roof.
Yeah, we turn to booze, right? So
We do.
And we are not going to go deep into pandemic land today. What we are going to go deep into is booze today. And we're going to talk about booze because both of us have some background in booze and we know a lot of people in booze. I'm a certified sommelier. Now, listen, this doesn't mean much of anything. This means that years ago, 2004, I sat for a test. I did a 3-day seminar after studying for about a year. And when I say study, I literally mean that. I read several books. I will recommend those books to you during this broadcast to learn about wine. And I did a lot of tastings. I did weekly tastings to get my palate in gear. And I took a test after my 3-day seminar to get certified as a sommelier, which was a service level. It was restaurant service level. But I did it because I was writing about wine and food at the time, and I wanted the clout. I wanted the credit, and it worked. I worked for some pretty big magazines, including Decanter, and I wrote for Wines and Vines, and I met a lot of very interesting people. I had a food and wine show on a small little NPR radio station up here in Ventura County, California. I was summarily dismissed.
but no doubt, Mark, your credentials are phenomenal with all the amazing. Now, I'm going to humble you a little bit because I know
you're better.
Proud, but let me tell you something.
You're better.
I used to make my own beer.
Yes, you did.
And right. And for a while I was going crazy with it. And yep. I actually took a blue ribbon for my
I remember this.
For my stout.
Yes.
Stout. And at the first place at the Renaissance Fair. $100. $100.
You won $100 for that.
Yeah. So that's, you know, you're getting good. All uppity about all your pedigree, but you didn't win a beer contest, did you?
I'm not getting uppity. I'm just telling the nice audience who I am.
To be humble because all I did was win a beer contest.
No, but that's not the truth. The thing is, you live smack dab in the middle of wine country and you've spent a lot of time there and you've done a lot of tasting, and really honestly, that's at the heart of learning the craft of wine is tasting and talking about it, and that's what we do. So,
and educated myself. Wife and I took a wine pairing class with McKeon Phillips, Artisan Phillips, excuse me, who was, you know, owned McKeon Phillips for a long time and just passionate about wine. I loved the guy's passions. I disagreed with some of his ideas on pairing, but I also understood them. So it was really neat to take in those kind of classes. And you learn a lot, which...
And over the years, I think it's just become, you know, let's call fair ball here. I mean, look, the fact is alcohol can be dangerous, and we all know that. You can drink too much, and I know. and obviously, during a time of pandemic, people are drinking too much, and I think I probably fit in that category somewhere too. But the fact is, there's a great wealth of stories and information and interesting things behind creating these beverages and using Mother Nature to do it. And I think it's fascinating, infinitely so. So I'm excited.
I am too. Absolutely. And it's fun kind of dipping into it. So Mark and I, of course, are drinking. Mark, what are you drinking right now?
Okay. So having finished a glass of beer, because today is Taco Tuesday as we record.
What kind of beer was it? Was it Corona?
No, it wasn't that bad, but it was Sam Adams. So it's not the world's greatest beer, but you know what? It's inexpensive and it works.
A good lager, actually.
It's like a good lager. Yeah, I drink it and it's very nice. But in addition, what I've done is I've brought in what I am calling my new local beverage, and my family is planning on moving to the Pacific Northwest, and we found a distillery up there. My sister-in-law found it, called Chambers Bay Distillery. Chambers Bay is right on Puget Sound, and they make distilled beverages, and I am drinking their bourbon. Now, it's 3-year-old bourbon.
Oof.
Just 3. However, it is lovely and wonderful because of the way they make it. What they do is they distill the beverage, and then it goes into the American oak barrels. But importantly, what they do with the barrels is they put them on a houseboat on Chambers Bay. Mm. And as the water rocks gently the houseboat back and forth, that liquor kind of sloshes back and forth in the barrel and gets itself into the lees of the barrel, and it really kind of mixes it up. So instead of just sitting still in a barn for, you know, years, 11 years, 12 years, this actually kind of for 3 years just rocks back and forth on the water. And it has notes of salt in it, you know, kind of a sea smell to it. It really does taste that way. And it has that lovely vanillin from the barrel because it's been rocking back and forth. So it's quite nice, actually.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, I've been on a bourbon rye binge for a while, but I've now rediscovering gin. And I say rediscovering because a gin was my thing for a very, very, very long time.
Oh, I did not know that.
Thanks to my wife. Yeah, in terms of that. Gin and tonics were it. Mm. And our, you know, we would do tea, what we call T&Ts, which was Tanqueray and tonic. And but I love Beefeater as well, like the OG mm-hmm. of gins right there. this, what I'm drinking is Dorwood, which is a distillery in Buellton, California.
Yeah, not far from you.
They're not very far at all. And they make whiskeys, and they also make this gin. And let me tell you something. The gin is amazingly delicious. Just the botanicals in this are so much fun. So really, really, I like complex gins now because I don't do tonic anymore, which is sugar, basically mm-hmm. sugar water. Mm-hmm. So I drink club soda, try to avoid the sugars. So now I really, really like botanical floral gins, and this is definitely in there.
Yeah, I do too. I like them herby, like that Hendrix gin has that nice herby.
Oh my God. Yeah. Hendrix Aviator is just.
Yeah. Aviation.
Aviation, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Which, who is it? The guy who plays Deadpool, I guess, owns it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. He's.
Oh, I didn't know that. Aviation. Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds. And I'm sold, Ryan. You did a good job picking your gin companies, because Aviation is one of my favorites, absolute faves.
It's funny, I just bought some. It was on sale at the local grocery the other night, and I brought it home, and I made myself a G&T. You know, it's funny when you say that it's all that sugar. I knew there was sugar, but I didn't pay much attention to that. There really is. It's a soda, is what it is.
Tonic water. What is it?
Quinine,
or whatever, and that's just nothing but sugar.
But so, it can also, because it's quinine, it might stop the COVID.
May, right? You know, there's that medicinal. That's the tastiest medicine.
It's got a medicinal value.
There you go. Yeah, that's very true.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was, because I was researching Jim a little, but I wanted you to finish your point, and then I'll get back to
it. Well, I bought it for the first time. I made a gin and tonic. I had 2 of them that night, tall ones. I don't make them lightly. Now, what I do with my G&Ts is I add bitters.
Oh, okay.
I pour in Angostura bitters. I do 3 or 4 splashes, which really, between you and me, is more like 5 or 6 or 7 splashes.
Right, right.
and I got that from my friend Michael Pierce, who is an art professor. He's been interviewed on my show. He is, in fact, episode 2 of Considering Some Things. And Michael is a GNT fan. He'll sit there. He'll call me on the video screen on Facebook. He'll call me and he'll say, "What are you drinking now?" And I'm usually nothing at that point. He says, "I'm already 3 in."
Good man. Well, you know, and I like that, rediscovering, something traditional and making it untraditional. Mm-hmm. So like you putting bitters with, because gin almost goes with everything. That's why it I does. Love it so much. So yeah. My very good friend of mine, who is also a liquor, just aficionado, and he gets his own bitters and everything like that. He t-shirt and things like that and goes crazy. And he made his own gin. And but one of his favorite drinks is an old fashioned. Which,
oh my, me too.
You know what's in an old fashioned? Yeah. Is
sugar. It's sugar. Well, it's simple syrup or sugar, and then it's also bitters. It's bitters and bourbon.
Correct. Yeah, bourbon. Or really, I believe rye whiskey was even really traditional old fashioned. Then it became bourbon.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So in either one, they switched off. Well, Jeff goes, "You know, I made this gin, and I think gin would be a great old fashioned." And I'm like, "That's crazy. Let's do it." and so we made old fashions out of his gin, and oh my God, it was just really lovely. It was really fun.
Of course, you won't disclose Jeff's last name simply because making gin in America without a license is illegal.
Well, you can do home kits.
Not distilled.
Well, not distilled. Yeah. That's true. So,
you
like,
can't distill.
My daughter actually gave me a gin home kit. And all it is, you're going to take vodka and then put the botanicals in there and you know, let it sit for a while. But I mean,
interesting.
Yeah.
So. It's vodka that has the versatility, but it's the devil's drink.
Vodka is now that's another interesting. So I loved where gin came from, and you know, because that goes back to 70 AD. Oh, you're talking.
Are you serious?
Yeah, physician 70 name. AD. Yeah, Pandanus Dioscorides. Right, he published
this
herbal medicine thing, and it said within the papers there's a detailed description of juniper berries.
Nice.
Steeped into wine, which was
interesting.
It was to combat chest ailments, right?
Well, it probably
does. And then
does.
In 1055, the Benedictine monks, right, in Italy, included a recipe for tonic wine infused with juniper berries, right?
Wow.
So, I mean, this stuff goes, and then the Dutch, I think, the 16th century, began producing a spirit called Genever. Genever, yeah.
Oh, Geneve.
Genever. So,
maybe it is. Yeah, Genever. Wow, interesting.
Genever, yeah. Tomato, tomato. So, but Genever, it essentially consists of malt wine based with a huge amount of juniper wines or juniper berries to kind of mask the horrible flavor of the malt wine, right?
Yeah, so, right,
but also was considered medicinal. All alcohols back in those days were medicinal.
Well, but there is some truth to the fact that that's the problem. Is in America, right, we've let go of that. But I had a friend who started a limoncello company here in Ventura County, and it no longer exists, but I don't think. But he, you know, he had originally on the label, he had a digestive or digestivo,
right,
which is Italian, because limoncello in Italy is given after a dinner and it helps you digest your food. You know, in small amounts, it's given as a nice little aperitif.
Aperitif, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And they would, the Americans in you know, in our ATF and in our alcoholic strange world, they won't let you call it that. Because then you're saying it has medicinal properties. Well, in fact, it does, in its proper amounts. Look, when I was sick as a kid, if I got the flu or if I got a cold, my mom made me hot toddies, and they poured whiskey into them. And you know what? It worked.
Of course, yeah. it is absolutely a cure-all.
Stops you from coughing. You know, cough syrup. When you look at what cough syrup really is, it's a lot of alcohol. I think NyQuil is 25% alcohol.
Is it really? I didn't know.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
That's well, then you... I guess so I'm gonna. That's why. That's that. What is NyQuil? Does remind me of an alcohol. You know that licorice-y.
Oh no no no! Don't say it. Schlager. Is it the
Goldschlager?
Goldschlager.
But you know what else? Kind of. I don't know if you've ever had absinthe.
I have had absinthe. I like absinthe.
I did too. I when I was in New Orleans, they have an absinthe bar. It's really, really cool. Highly suggest because they will make you all the dip, the American absinthe versus the French absinthe versus the Austrian absinthe.
Oh,
it was so much fun! And they did it all traditionally with the French one. I think is the one where they with the sugar cube on top.
Yeah, that's right.
And,
yeah,
and it was in you know did it that way, but it was really fun. And of course, it just kind of reminded me of licorice. So it,
you know, sort of... it does remind you of licorice. Absinthe is a beautiful thing. Now, again, that's a Michael Pierce beverage. He loves that, but he will literally pour a tall one. You know, he'll obviously it's infused with some water, but you know, a quarter of the glass or more is absinthe, and then he puts in water and he says, oh, it's very refreshing. I'm like, on what planet is absinthe refreshing?
Well, it's kind of, it's not a, I don't know.
It's not heavy, but there's a lot of alcohol in there.
There is. And of course, you remember the old days, it would get you, you know, hammered because of the wormwood or whatever. And
right, you know, right.
And that's only because back in those days, they didn't really have a great distillation process or anything like that. It was just, you know, really bad for you in heavy amounts.
Now, when you buy it today, there is no wormwood, I would think, right?
I don't think so. And if they did, they would just, you know, but I don't even think, and I could be wrong, but I was reading about it, wormwood within itself didn't have a heavy hallucinogen, or maybe it did, and they just removed it now. So I'm forgetting. I was going to that. I did not plan on talking about this
absinthe.
I'm absent of that stuff. But
we're less than half. We're halfway through the show, and we've covered a lot of ground.
we did. I mean, I could talk about vodka all day long because it was funny you dissed it, but vodka has a lot of really interesting things about it, including
that
it's not it doesn't have an alcoholic, like if you drink whiskey and then breathe on somebody, everybody knows you drink whiskey,
right?
And vodka is almost a hidden kind of smell. It's very interesting.
I always thought that was attributable to gin, but I guess it's vodka that is that way.
Yeah, gin vodka more than gin.
Interesting.
But yeah, definitely vodka. And
now, in the freezer, I've got a bottle of Ran, R-A-N, vodka. This is from Chambers Bay Distillery, the same place that I got my bourbon from here. And it is wheat. It is distilled wheat. There's no potato in it.
Oh, well, you'd be actually, yeah, potato is kind of a Russian thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, vodka can be distilled from any starches, really, or sugar plants. But corn, rye, wheat, I mean, very, very common. Where you go, you know, to the old days, it was potatoes and then molasses.
Oh, my.
Believe it or not. Yeah, which molasses.
I thought that was
also,
rum.
Well, that is. And I was going to go with molasses, of course, but they did vodka that way as well.
Wow.
Rum with sugar cane and molasses quite a bit. And molasses.
Are you?
They ran with just because it was cheaper than the sugar cane.
Well, sure, yeah. Are you a rum fan? Do you like rum?
I don't mind it. It's sugary, so I don't drink it. I avoid sugar a little bit, so rum tends to be heavier on the sugar than most of the other alcohol. So but I like
a rum and coke or rum and diet coke. I do really enjoy that beverage.
But I never got into it. I mean, I know it was for some people, it's just like the best thing since sliced bread. Everybody has their thing.
Sure.
What fascinates me is all the different alcohols and how they're very similar in a lot of ways in the distilled process. You know, gin is, you know, it has the juniper thing. Vodka, not so much. But then you've got whiskeys, you know, where a bourbon has to be 51% corn.
Corn, that's correct.
Whiskeys do not necessarily have to be. I mean, if you get Irish whiskeys or all kinds of things, you know.
Yep.
So, but they also triple distill their products Irish. That's why it's kind of a mellower taste than like a regular whiskey. And, you know, bourbons have to be, in the charred oak barrels, whereas whiskeys don't necessarily have to be in.
That's correct. Oak. Yeah. And they taste different too. I mean, we were talking about this before the show started, but that sound you hear is my dog. My partner who broadcasts right next to me here, he's an old guy and he's, I'm taking a selfie of us now while I podcast, but he likes to podcast with me and he's, decidedly unengaged in the process.
But he's a good boy. He's a big sweetie.
Look at that, man. I can't believe how great he is. I'm going to get a picture of him. Here we go.
So now, were you ever a tequila guy?
Well, yeah. Sadly.
Were you? Yeah. I think we all drank it. I'm the type, admittedly, in my youth, I got sick on it. And to this day, and we're talking, that was my 20s, 25 years ago or whatever, and I can't drink it anymore.
Really?
Yeah, I'll smell it. And, you know, tequila has that smell that you recognize, you know, that java
big time
plant or whatever. So yep. It's like, woof, I can't.
You know, I have a friend. So one of the writing gigs I did, one of the magazines I've written for is Ventana Magazine here in Ventura County. Great group of people. And they asked me to go interview a guy who it turned out that I knew his wife, Lupe Murillo. And Lupe and I taught together for a few years in Camarillo here. And her husband is a guy named Adolfo Murillo. He's an ophthalmologist, but if not, he's an optometrist. And I think optometrist. I apologize, Dr. Murillo, for I don't remember exactly, but a very nice man. I really enjoyed his company. Invited me over because in his family he inherited an agave farm in Mexico.
Okay.
And the original intention, he and Lupe got together to think about what they were going to do with this. They lived here in the States, and they certainly had family down south in Mexico. They thought, what we do? They decided to keep it, and they turned it around into an organic agave farm. They hire locals. They get glass that's made there in that small little town in I want to say Jalisco, but I'm not positive that's right. And they make what's called tequila alquimia. And they have the silver, the añejo, and the reposado. And I wrote an article about him. Wow. Because, you know, he's a local optometrist who makes tequila. Well, it turns out he doesn't just make tequila. It really is some of the best tequila you'll ever taste. By itself, drinking it without any mixers, it is an extraordinary flavor. I am absolutely taken by this stuff, and I remain taken by it. It is not cheap. Yeah, it's just
but
under
he's Jalisco, right? So
I believe so. Yeah.
Well, it makes sense because tequila. So if you go to Mexico and stuff, there are districts that are allowed to make tequila. There are districts that are allowed to make mezcal.
Yep.
Right. Which a lot of people confuse them.
Sure. Right? Yeah, they do. I have some mezcal in my liquor cabinet. I've never opened it.
Yeah. Tequila is. Tequila is a type of mezcal.
Oh,
but mezcal is not always a tequila.
Okay.
So both of them are made from agave, but they different flavor production methods, that kind of thing. And tequila has to be specifically blue agave.
Interesting.
Where mezcal can be made from lots of agave
different
species.
Agaves.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Different agaves. Correct. So that's kind of the difference between the mezcal and the tequila. And then again, they have to be in the districts. And I know Jalisco is definitely a tequila district. And there were a few others I didn't study.
So to this day, it's something you won't drink. I mean, look, we could end up going down to Mexico together and we're going to have to drink tequila. It's going to happen.
I shouldn't drink.
Listen,
you know me, I'm a peer pressure guy. So if everybody, I'm not a smoker. If everybody's smoking cigars and gives me a cigar,
you'll smoke.
Why not?
Yeah,
tequila. I just woof. It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite. I respect it. Don't get me wrong.
No, you shouldn't say respect. You should say appreciate, because respect means this can damage me.
And again, I respect it. So going by That's exactly what I mean. It can do terrible things to me.
It really can.
There's certain things that, you know.
Well, tequila's alcohol is fairly high. The thing about bourbon, look, there are lots of people that can get drunk on these drinks. They can get drunk on anything. But the fact is tequila has enough alcohol in it that really with very little of the liquid, you will be buzzed pretty quickly. That's true of most liquors, you know, brown liquor certainly, but you don't end up, there's no sweetness. That's not true. There's sweetness to bourbon, but it's not the same.
I would say there again, bourbons are supposed to be very sweet because again, they have corn.
Right,
21% of it is corn. Yeah.
But it's not the same kind of sweet. It's not a sugary sweet. It doesn't taste like that.
It's not like a rum sweet.
No.
So yeah, and all that. Although, and it's funny, I haven't had Jack Daniels in a while, but see, even Tennessee, there's all these different like styles of whiskey, and Tennessee whiskey is Tennessee whiskey, right?
Yeah, that's
so, it. And what they do is filter, they take their whiskey and they filter it through sugar maple charcoal.
Aha.
That's what Jack Daniels does. I don't know, but it's, again, it's supposed to be very sweet. And that's what distinguishes Tennessee whiskey from, say, Jim Beam.
Our good friend Sean Neer is a fan of the Gentleman Jack.
Yeah.
And then also my friends Brian and Karen. Now, Brian and I made wine together back in the early aughts of 2000s. And we won a gold medal from the Mid-State Fair for our Tempranillo. We'll talk about wine here shortly. But
okay.
Yeah, and that was a real treat. But Brian is a fan of the single barrel Jack Daniels, which I have to admit does taste a darn sight better than your average little square or rectangular bottle of Jack Daniels, which I'm not knocking. Jack Daniels is fine, but there's a real difference to the single barrel.
Well, now so when I think single barrel, I'm always thinking about Scotch, even though funny enough, there's plenty of blended Scotches.
Oh but, yeah, Johnny Walker. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there you go.
What do you now? Do you drink Scotch? Are you a? Will
no,
you
I
have?
Do. Yeah, and I do like single barrel Scotch quite a bit. Although okay. I will drink a blended. I think it's delicious.
Well, it's you have a reputation in the music scene for drinking Jameson's, right? You're an Irish whiskey guy,
and that's because of this bar that I used to constantly play out. That's now closed. Matter of fact, that was the 1880 Union,
right?
Which was kind of historic, and I used to play there a couple times a month. And then I started this. I can't drink mixed drinks anymore. So I just like, give me whiskey on the rocks. She had the Jameson Caskmate. I don't know if you've had that.
Sure, I have. Yeah, that's excellent.
And it's really cool because they're aging them in either an IPA barrels or the stout barrels. And of course, stout barrel Caskmate is my favorite. It's just delicious.
Yeah,
and it has and it does it. It's whiskey that. It tastes a lot sweeter in that Caskmate style. It's really tasty.
Which is a good thing.
No, it's wonderful. So Irish whiskeys tend to be lighter than certainly Scotches or bourbons anyway.
Yeah, because absolutely.
Again, they triple distill, that kind of thing. But so Irish whiskeys, I think if you've never been a whiskey drinker and you want to start with an Irish whiskey.
Really?
It's like in my opinion, it's just a mellower, gentler whiskey and it'll still get you really hammered fast.
Everybody like the sound of the aircraft going over the
Navy.
Yeah,
I'm really enjoying it.
There we go. Woo-hoo!
That's
sorry
something
about
we,
that.
We edit that out. I'm just curious.
We really can't edit that out. I've subject myself to it by being outside here, so it is what it is. The Navy is now part of our podcast.
Oh, there we go. Right on. Way to go, Flyboys.
I apologize for that, but it'll happen again. So just brace yourself. It's funny as you watch when we record our podcast. I have the sound bar in front of me, and so. It's almost like an EKG reading as the sound waves go by. And usually if I'm not talking, my line is flat. It's nice and quiet, but there's this huge burst of sound now where Keith is trying to talk and the sound of the jet passing over really destroys it. I'm sorry, man. That's
okay. I just knew to shut up. Like, all right,
that's all you can do.
This no, you should. You should probably. Pass.
You should just keep talking because it there's nothing. When this comes out in the wash, they'll be able to hear you. So they'll be able to hear me too because I've got the microphone close to me. I just probably can't hear what I'm saying. You know, FA-18 passes over.
Did you know just by? I know you're an aviation guy, so
yeah.
You know just from the sound what it was?
No, I'm not that good. Although, that's not fair. The answer to the question is yes, I did because of what flies over here. So what we get flying over here, the jets, the loud jets like that are fighter jets. We are a Navy area now on occasion, right next to the Navy base is an Air Force National Guard, Air National Guard base. And you'll occasionally get some Air Force jets going in there, which are, you know, F-16s, F-15s, various things. But the Navy, it's when you're hearing a jet that loud, it's an FA-18. Or, as my friend Ron Beck, who lives around the corner, says, you know what that is, don't you? That's the sound of freedom, my friends.
That's what I say about American whiskey.
American whiskey.
Freedom. I call it freedom booze.
I call this freedom water.
Freedom
water. It is freedom. Why do we get Southern accents?
I don't know why we. I'm sorry, all those in the South. We don't, you know.
Yeah, we're a little sorry.
I'm kind of sorry, but it's fun.
That's another thing we have to do post pandemic. Well, no, we have to go to the Kentucky Bourbon Trail and then record a podcast from the Bourbon Trail.
Yeah, the beginning and the end. So we're all we're sorry. This next stuff is really today.
I love you guys so much. Yeah, you know what? We'll do that. We'll go to the Bourbon Trail and we'll record a podcast from the Bourbon. That's going to be a thing we do. Now, I have a special offer. Let's segue to wines.
Okay.
So living up by Keith, who is a musician on the Central Coast, if you haven't been listening till now, that's one thing you didn't know about him. Is one of your neighbors is another Keith, a guy named Keith Roberts, who is the lead singer for the band The Young Dubliners. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites, kind of an Irish Celtic rock band and a lot of fun. And Keith has a very distinct Irish accent. He is, too, interviewed on Considering Some Things a couple of episodes ago.
Great interview.
Thank you, man. And wonderful guy. And he says, we'll have to do some tasting. You'll come up and we'll do some wine tasting because he lives right in the thick of it and he loves it. And I'm thinking, all right, we're going to get Keith Roberts, Keith Cox, our wives, and we're going to go wine tasting with the Irishman and we're going to record it.
How are we going to just bring a tape?
You can, you know what? You can do it on an iPhone. You really can. Any phone, any cell phone with a voice recorder, because the sound quality is pretty distinct on it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, that's a good point.
Yeah.
The wineries here on the Central Coast is funny. Are really, you know, because we all talk about Napa, and Napa really put California, you know, the California wines on the, you know, that's it. Everybody knows. You know, Napa.
Of course, it's on fire right now, so that's the problem.
Oh, and horrifying.
Yeah, it's a horrible fire. Yeah.
And didn't you, some wineries are absolutely losing all of their crops.
Well, Meadowood has lost a lot. One of our sponsors, Naboo Wines, for whom I've done some work in the past, and I continue to be a patron of theirs, and Naboo grows grapes. They're négociants, the French would call them. They don't own vineyards, but they buy grapes from various vineyards, including vineyards in Napa and vineyards in Malibu, thus the name. But their Napa crop, their entire Napa crop is smoke tainted from the fires. There's not going to be a 2020 vintage for Naboo wines, and that could be true for a lot of different wineries. You know, right in the thick of harvest, this fire has hit, started on Sunday morning at about 4:30 a.m. in St. Helena. in the St. Helena district of Napa, and it has burned down Meadowood Winery. It's burned down Chateau Boswell Winery. It's destroyed a lot of acreage, and it's a very bad scene.
And once again, going back to the really devastating thing is if you're a winery and your, say, vineyard isn't all burned down, but we've had so much smoke, we've had horrible air quality,
yeah,
and there is this true thing called smoke taint,
yeah,
which is horrifying. And then, yeah, you know,
it destroys the grapes.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a complex thing, but mm-hmm, the wine tastes burnt, medicinal, campfire-y, yeah, so yeah, it's very obvious, you know, so the best descriptors would be like smoke-tainted wine was that if you're fond of licking wet ashtrays, you know, then boom. So
then, boy, I mean, this is your wine.
Right. And it happens when wine, here's the scary thing. So it happens, smoke taint happens when grapes are exposed to smoke, and you're talking in as little as 30 minutes. And it's more than just residue sitting on the grapes that cause these flavors. When wood burns, it releases aroma compounds, which are called volatile phenols.
Sure, yeah.
These compounds can permeate the grape skins and rapidly bond with sugar inside to form these molecules called glycosides.
You're reading now. You don't know this off the top of your head.
No, I do all this. Come on, I've done all this. What are you talking about? So, yeah, the phenols are no longer. So it's an interesting thing, though. Their smokiness cannot be detected by smell or taste. However, once the grapes are fermented, the acidity in the resulting wine will begin to break these bonds, rendering the phenols volatile. Mm. So it doesn't taste bad by within itself, but it happens during fermentation.
Yeah.
And it's a real big bummer.
And that's it. It's destroyed. Now, the other thing, let's talk about it. Seriously, what it's destroying, Napa, like all of the wine zones in California, these are family businesses, a lot of them. Some of them aren't. Obviously, there's corporate interests all over the place. But a lot of these places are family businesses that have been in the families for sometimes hundreds of years.
Right.
And it's wiping them out. This is not a good thing. It is very scary. There's not a lot of, and it depends on how you look at recovery. I don't know what recovery will look like in Napa. Napa is a strong place, and it certainly has enough vintages and enough bottles to last through if people after the pandemic come back. But that's the thing. It's not just the fire. Now there's a pandemic, so people aren't really showing up in droves. Tourists aren't flying up to, you know, to Northern California to taste wine anymore. And that needs to end, by the way, but that's all I'll say about that. it's time to get back to life. But
I mean, how much money do they make on the tasting versus selling bottles?
Well, there you go. They make a lot more on the tasting. Wow. You know, so tastings up in Napa are expensive. And
that's a good point.
Yeah.
That's why I live here in the Central Coast
where it isn't expensive.
It's not. I mean, I remember back, I'm not going to date myself, but I remember back in the day when
they're free.
They were free.
Yeah.
It's just free, and if you're buying wine, yahoo. But then they started realizing we don't have to do this for free.
No, we really don't. And they actually were pushed toward that. In some ways, as a business model, it's better to charge, obviously. But they were also pushed toward that because what happens, unfortunately, because it's alcohol, is, you know, people come in, just get free booze.
Right.
They weren't interested in actually tasting the wine and seeing, you know, how this Chardonnay tastes different from this Chardonnay.
Right.
They were just drinking. So I understand it. I don't begruge paying for a tasting. I truly don't. Yeah.
No, it makes sense for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you still have to maintain a wine tasting room and everything like that. And it's not free. And, you know, there's costs and, you know, California taxes the hell out of you. So, yeah, it makes absolutely sense.
Being a non-sugar guy, do you still drink wine much?
Yeah,
you,
wine's only got, so counting carbs and everything like that, about anywhere from 4 to 6 carbs a glass.
Right, right.
So I count my carbs. I know everybody's like insane when I tell them that, but I try to limit myself to about 20 grams of carbs.
Sure.
A day.
A day.
So yeah, I can.
So two glasses of wine.
Yeah, you got that's 12.
Is eight.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. Depending on the wine, that's the really thing. It depends on the wine, and some have different. So the sweeter wines are worse. But like a Cabernet is, you know, really about 4 to 5 grams.
Yeah,
so, you know, I can have about 3 glasses.
Yeah, okay, you know. That's not too
and
bad.
Tastings even more because you're doing less if you're going around doing the tasting thing. So you can have quite a bit. Whereas whiskey doesn't have anything in it, and so you're like, sweet.
Yeah.
So that's my thing. And I love wine. Don't get me, especially because I play so, you know, there's so many wineries out here and the majority of my music is, you know, wineries hiring me.
Sure.
So, and the best thing about that is because, you know, I get free wine out of the deal. Yeah.
Amazing. The Navy is coming by again. So here they go. Yeah. You can hear the roar. It's funny. It just sounds like it's roaring just when it gets over my head.
Yeah. I'm a plane, everybody. Yeah.
It is ridiculously loud, ladies and gentlemen. Ridiculously loud.
That is. Wow.
Well, even the dog gets upset. He's like, what the heck is going on? You know,
Smoke Taint. That's my new band name. I've decided.
Smoke Taint.
Well, I'm wondering, though, the wine, just is not going to get that much wine this year. So that happens, you know, 2020, right?
Yeah.
Wine. No one's going to want a 2020 anyway.
No.
It's just such a bad year.
Some of them were already harvested, and some are already in tanks and barrels, and those will be okay.
Be fine, right.
But what's still hanging on the vine, I don't think you're going to get much out of. I can't think to myself that with this current fire in St. Helena, that they're going to be able to get to salvage anything that's still hanging on the vine.
Oh, and there's amazing wineries, you know, in Oregon and in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing stuff. And we all got hit with this fiery season.
Oh yeah, the whole West Coast is on fire. Yeah.
I
wine has always been my thing. It's my beverage of choice. I prefer it. I'm like you with beer. I like beer once in a while. I like beer with tacos. I like wine with tacos too. Yeah. And I've had everything from Pinot Noir. I've had Syrah. I've had white wines, various kinds with tacos. I love a good Roussan with a taco. Wine's always been my thing. That's where I kind of got my alcohol education, and I do love it. I care about it more because I learned about it, and I find that everyone who goes into it is really following a passion. You know, this is not a business for people who want to make money, because you're not going to. The old joke is, if you want to make $1 million in the wine industry, start with 20 million.
Exactly. Bingo.
Yeah, you do it because you care about it, and I think part of my future when I retire from the classroom here in June is if I can get a job at a winery, I'm going to do that in Washington. I'll do that because it's something I would really love to do.
Well, I think you would be great at it, even if you were just serving the wine, because you know so much about it and you have the palate and everything like that.
And I can tell people you'll like this, and if you don't,
you're probably a communist.
You're a communist.
Vodka drinking commie is what you are.
Of course, these days, I don't know. Is calling people communist a bad thing?
Apparently not anymore.
If you're under the age of 40, yeah, right. If you're under the age of 40, you're probably a commie.
Yeah, in fact, capitalists are horrible people.
Yeah, the people who actually want to leave each other alone and make money.
Uh-oh, here we go. We're getting political again.
What did we do? What has happened?
Anyway, wine. Smoke Taint.
Yeah, Smoke Taint.
Which, by the way, if you're into white wines, smoke taint doesn't happen with them as much.
Oh, really? Interesting. Why is that?
Yeah, well, because the compounds are concentrated in the skins.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Whites don't typically sit on their skins during fermentation like Brits do.
Interesting. That is different. I did not realize that.
Well, now that is wild.
That is wild, wacky stuff. Ed?
Did you know that? Yes.
Yes!
Great one. Smoke Taint.
Smoke Taint. Great one. Smoke great Taint. One. You know, as I'm looking, as I say, I'm sitting on my patio, as most people know now from the roar of Navy engines.
Just really gassy and you're just hiding it. That was a plane, I swear.
I swear it was. Look, I'm looking to the east where the moon is rising. It's actually quite pretty, but there is smoke, and there's definitely smoke kind of lofting down from the north, and it's filling the sky.
Taint.
Yeah,
more well, smoke it's, taint.
It's just not it's not a healthy thing, and wine is now. Look, to me, it's the quintessential beverage. It fits pretty much every occasion, and it's something that I think it really has to do with it's the gods of Bacchanalia, right? It's a joyous thing. You don't drink wine when you're stressed.
Well, I don't know. I think that's the cool thing about wine is you can, you know, so it's really weird because you go to Europe, right? Yeah. In Europe, it was all about pairing.
Yes.
Really, it really was. We are the really, Americans the first one to drink wine for drinking wine. Like, yeah, give me that bottle of, Merlot, and I want to drink it. Pop that puppy.
Well, right, and the Europeans don't think of varietals the way we do. They blend wines, particularly the French. The French blend grapes, and those grapes, they don't sit there and go, oh, well, this is a Pinot Noir. They talk about Burgundy because that's the region where that wine grows. And
you call the wines Burgundies, yeah.
Yeah, so I that is another goal of mine is to get to France, and I'd like to go to Provence in the south and have the rosés. I'd like to go to Burgundy. I'd like to go to the Rhone Valley.
I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's go, Frenchie. Let's do it.
We'll fly into Paris and then get on that, what does it, the TGV, the train, you know, the really, really fast. Yeah, and go into the countryside and drink wine and eat cheese.
I'm very frightened. It's going very fast. What am I going to do? I need wine to calm my nerves.
That's it. And so you get off the train and you have wine.
Wine and cheese. Oh, yeah. I love that. It's going to be exciting. Wine and cheese, man.
Yeah. Wine and cheese is the best thing in the world.
It really is.
It's a good note to probably end this on. is you need to treat yourself. Look, if you don't want to drink alcohol, none of us want to force you. But a good glass of something in the evenings and sit on the patio and calm the nerves is not a bad way to end a day.
Oh, man, alcohol, and we go back, like I was talking about the histories early, alcohol was very medicinal back in its days, and there's a reason why it was then and why it still is now to some extent. But like anything, don't, you know, abusing it is the problem.
Sure.
But enjoying it in moderation is a fantastically wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So nothing like a nice wine, and it's so fun once you start getting into wine pairing and how much fun that is.
Absolutely.
You know, having a little bit of wine than having a cheddar cheese and have a little bit more and then putting an almond in there and trying that out and watch how the wine characteristics change dramatically depending on what you're eating. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah, pairing is a lot of fun, absolutely. But I also just like drinking a good wine, you know, and sitting on the patio, and there you go.
Yep, and that's the beauty of it. You know, when we move to the Pacific Northwest, we're still going to have this and maintain this lifestyle. I like creating a good dish to eat. I'll make pizzas. I'll grill something, and then pull out a good bottle of wine and make a nice old fashioned or mix up a beverage. And that to me, I don't think there's anything better. It can be overdone, but doing it in the right context. And by the way, here's how you tell you're doing the right context. Do you get a good night's sleep and do you wake up feeling well enough the next morning?
Right. If you wake up headache-y, then you blew it.
Yeah. If you're crispy when you wake up, it's no use. It doesn't work.
I'm feeling crispy.
I'm a little crispy.
I think I got a little smoke taint.
It is a good name for a band, man.
Yeah, so smoke taint.
Well, another episode of Considering Some Things in the Bag. Right. We are brought to you by Nabu Wines, as we discussed earlier. Nabu Wines in Westlake Village, nabuwines.com, NABUwines.com. They do local delivery. They make great varietals and blends from both the Malibu coast and what's left of the Napa Valley, and you ought to try some soon.
I agree with that. We're also brought to you by 805 Musician Network on Facebook. The Facebook group 805 Musician Network is...
Speed up. Here comes the jet.
Only four musicians. Oh, my gosh. So if you're a musician and you're looking for other musicians to collaborate with or to get advice for, if you're trying to sell equipment or you're looking for a band or looking for venues, 805 Musician Network on Facebook. You have to be a musician. That's musicians helping musicians.
Ending on the sound of freedom, ladies and gentlemen.
Freedom! America!
America. The sound of freedom. Have a great day, night, whatever it is for you. Enjoy. Let's get through this together, and let's learn to love a little bit more. Thanks for listening to Considering Some Things.
Take care, everybody. Have a good night. We'll see you.